that will be part of the exam on Monday. Monday, I know. So we're going to deal now with lipids, all that fatty stuff in the blood. When we think about lipids, there are a lot of different places where things can act, where things happen, and there are drugs that can actually impact at these different sites. If you just think about it, fats and cholesterol typically are absorbed from the diet, so you've got dietary chylomicrons. So these can be absorbed, get into the capillary bed and tissues such as adipose tissue. There's lipoprotein lipase, which will cleave and form free fatty acids, which are available then for action within the tissue. The chylomicron gets cut down, if you will, to an IVL, intermediate density lipoprotein, which eventually gets broken down to an LDL. The LDL ends up being absorbed by a number of different tissues that have LDL receptors, so it can get in there, and then finally the process can just cycle. So there are a lot of different steps that drugs can be used to block fats, either their absorption, or you can accentuate effects through lipoprotein lipase, you can affect synthesis of the cholesterol. So there are a lot of different steps that we manipulate pharmacologically. So when you think about things, there are multiple forms of lipoproteinemias. And this table's in, it's not in the handout, and it's not there for a reason. But I'm going to talk about it anyway. There are multiple forms of hyperlipidemias, and depending on which form you have, you then treat accordingly. Now, some people have taken the lazy person's approach, and they basically start a person on a statin. And the rationale for it is the statins have a number of beneficial properties besides simply lowering lipids, and therefore, you know, let's use the best drug that we have that gives you the biggest set of effects that you have. And then there are others who say, no. You need to know what kind of lipid problem you're dealing with, and then you need to treat it with the most appropriate drug. And so recognize, this is the end of this, recognize that there are different forms of the disease that have high lipids as the result. Knowing what is active, which forms are high, do you have high triglycerides, do you have high cholesterol, is it all as LDL or is LDL normal? And it's total that's high, things like that get into the equation and need to be considered. So we've got lots of different drugs that can be used. I know you got a little different figure in your handout than I used, but when we think about how to modify lipids, almost all the books say that you need three very important things. First and foremost, you need a lifestyle change that involves diet. I remember Larry Rink standing up at a seminar going, the first thing you use to treat this problem with is diet, and the second thing you add is diet, and then if that doesn't work, you change your diet. And then you add the drug. Now, turn the finger this way and think about your own lifestyle. How readily are you going to change your diet? If you think about that, and you're one of the normal people in America, you're not going to change your diet very readily. And so what happens? They come see you, and you just write them a script, and hopefully that solves their problem. So diet, important. The trouble with diet therapy is it's not going to reduce the cholesterol that far. Some books say that you can reduce LDL maybe 10 to 15%. So that's good if that's all you need. But if the patient's running around with an LDL over 200 and you're really trying to shoot for something less than 130, definitely, maybe even lower depending on risk factor, then obviously diet is not going to do it all. So you got to do other things. The therapeutic lifestyle changes diet from the National Heart, Blood, Lung, and Institute basically said that patients need to, besides their diet, they want less than 7% saturated fat, less than 200 milligrams of cholesterol per day, and they want, ideally, upwards of 25 grams of soluble fiber per day. Difficult in the American grocery store with prepackaged products. Fiber's been taken out of almost everything. Anything that's baked anymore, just read your label and see how much fiber's in it. So the guidelines are really pretty high, and that's why diet alone usually doesn't work. Last year in physiology lab, we talked about the metabolic syndrome. Anybody remember what the characteristics are? Central obesity, blood pressure is usually up, low HDL, high LDL, insulin resistance is typical as well. So there are a lot of problems that these drugs can be used for. What are the risk factors that you worry about? Patient comes in, let's give you some numbers. They have a total cholesterol of 200, they have LDL of 139 and an HDL of, let's say, 45, and their triglycerides are running about 65. Hopefully that works out to give you the cholesterol of 200. What are you going to do? No idea or no nothing? I got heads going like this, so does that mean no idea or no nothing? Not going to do anything. A little high, not too bad, so you're not going to start drug therapy. Okay? So that's borderline. But let's say you're dealing with a 50-year-old man who is 65 pounds over ideal body weight, who is has a family history of coronary artery disease, and is pre-diabetic. Now the story changes. More aggressive therapy becomes the norm. 100 is the more desirable point for LDL, not 130. So risk factors: hypertension, smoking, diabetes, family history of coronary artery disease at a young age. All of these things need to be considered. Okay. Pharmacologic actions. There is a vitamin that people can take, vitamin B3, also known as niacin or nicotinic acid. Nicotinic acid is one of these drugs that affects lipolysis in adipose tissue. So it's going to reduce free fatty acid production in adipose tissue. When you think about it, though, you know a lot about vitamins, I hope. But if not, vitamin B3, for deficiency, you usually dose at about 100 milligrams per day. Let's say a patient has pellagra, then you're going to dose at about 250 to 500 milligrams per day. If you really want it to reduce cholesterol, you're at a gram a day or more. So very, very high dose. It can reduce triglycerides significantly. Can reduce LDL about 10 to 15%, and it can increase HDL. These percentages are not something that you need to memorize. They just give you an idea of how one set of drugs is compared to another. So the good news is, it raises the good cholesterol, it lowers especially triglycerides, and so it's used to treat hyperlipidemias in which both VLDL and LDL are increased. So we could talk about familial combined, this beast right here, type 2B, hyperlipoproteinemia. It's also used in type 4, familial hypertriglyceridemia. Now, niacin's not the nicest drug. In this case, history kind of gives you an idea of what it can do. We've got our friend Jesse Speedy Montana. He's a 48-year-old CEO of an auto manufacturer. He enjoys good food and drink and has a penchant for Cuban filter cigarettes. He's a 2-pack-a-day smoker. Physical exam unremarkable except for blood pressure of 145 over 95 and a body weight 45 pounds over ideal. LDL, 179. So he's told to pay strict attention to the step 2 diet, and that is similar to what the National Heart, Blood, Lung Institute's Therapeutic Lifestyles diet. So less than 7% saturated fat, less than 200 milligrams cholesterol. And to take niacin 2 grams 3 times daily with meals. And then they also put him on ramipril. Now what's ramipril? ACE inhibitor. Okay. How does he feel? Well, 2 months later, his lab results show improvement in cholesterol, decreased triglycerides, AST and ALT are mildly elevated, fasting glucose is 157. In addition, he complains of facial flushing, itching on the lower back, palms, and anus, and he wonders if these discomforts are due to his meds. What do you tell him, and what can you do about it? And so if you look under side effects for nicotinic acid, the answer is intense cutaneous flush and pruritus are common. They increase with increasing dose. If this guy had been started at a gram a day, he probably would have had less problem, or a gram 3 times a day rather than 2 grams. You can often reduce the cutaneous flush and the itching with aspirin. Nausea and abdominal pain are very common, so that's why it's encouraged to take it with meals. Glucose intolerance is common. So someone who's pre-diabetic is going to show up now with high blood sugars. And then you can have muscle problems, myalgias, rhabdomyolysis. And a final thought is you can even precipitate gout. So you might ask, well, why do we use this if it causes so many problems? And the answer is because it's very good at reducing serum triglycerides. But since you know all these side effects exist and Speedy Montana is your patient, what are you going to do for him? Lower the dose. That's one option. Tell him to take aspirin or switch the drug. So he's got enough other problems that, you know, you may be best off just switching him totally. But niacin or nicotinic acid, vitamin B3 in gram quantities can reduce serum triglycerides on the order of 80%, so big changes in this. Patients with this familial hypertriglyceridemia will show triglycerides in the 400-500 range. So we're talking big numbers, not little numbers. So, all right. So that's one drug that's available, niacin. A second set of drugs called fibric acid derivatives. These guys, agents, I've listed several of them there. The Lippincott book is especially biased toward fenofibrate. But basically, as a class, yes, sir. Because a lot of niacin will cause that. The increase was low, so it's basically just outside the upper end of normal and it's not too high. But as muscle problems begin to increase, you'll start seeing rises also. in AST especially. And one other enzyme, what's that? Say what? CKMM. Okay, so there are a lot of different effects going on. All right, triglycerides, let's see, fibric acid derivatives. They reduce LDL about 10 to 15%. They will increase HDL about 10 to 25%, 40 to 50% reductions in triglycerides. So again, you're getting everything going in the right direction with this class of drugs. Fibric acid derivatives stimulate lipoprotein lipase. So if you think about stimulating that enzyme, you then increase clearance of triglycerides from the plasma. So you remove them from the plasma. The mechanism seems to be related to, it's mediated through the peroxisome proliferator activated receptor. I don't know if you need to know that it activates PPAR, but anyhow. The nice thing about it is that it removes triglycerides from the serum. It's used to treat type 3 hyperlipidemia with elevated triglycerides. You can also use it in type 2B and also type 4 if they don't respond to other agents. With this drug, when you think about it, it helps to remove cholesterol from the liver, so you're going to get more cholesterol showing up in bile. With more cholesterol showing up in bile, you end up upsetting the cholesterol bile acid phospholipid ratios of the bile, and so you can make the patient prone to gallstones. So lithiasis is stones, and it's due to more cholesterol in the bile than is appropriate to maintain solubility. Besides the lithiasis-related problems, clofibrate, which was the prototype for the class, has lost a lot of favor in this country especially. It's got more favor still in Europe. Has lost its favor because of malignancy-related issues. This kind of makes some sense. Let's get rid of it if it's going to cause cancer. Once again, we see myositis and rhabdomyolysis. So you get breakdown of the muscle cells. And so you can raise AST and alkaline phosphatase about twofold. So you get lysis of skeletal muscle cells. Another thing that's important to realize is that the statins also do this. So now you've seen it with niacin, you've seen it with the fibric acid derivatives. We'll talk about it with statins. So these things can all affect muscle. And it can be very deleterious if you're not careful. And so the risk increases with combination therapy. Okay, what else have we got? GI. Most of the GI problems are mild, although you could list all kinds of things, dyspepsia, diarrhea, or just simple cramping and that sort of thing. We're not supposed to use this drug in pregnancy or nursing women. And there's some drug interactions, especially with warfarin. They compete for binding on plasma proteins. So clofibrate use is going down because of the tendency to induce malignancies. And so fenofibrate is clearly the Lippincott book choice of the prototype for the drugs now. I think gemfibrozil actually has a greater part of the market share, though. Yes, Sean?
Why would these drugs break down muscle cells?
That's a great question, and I don't have a good answer for it. Sorry. They just do. Okay, so that's another class of drugs that's available. The third class that we can talk about are the so-called bile acid sequestrants. These are all basically anion exchange resins. And so these resins are taken orally. They're nice, gritty, impalatable, not really refreshing on the palate type thing if you drink it as a slurry. Some come as pills that you can swallow. Anybody ever taken soluble fiber and mixed it up in a glass? You know what that tastes like, feels like? Okay, sand. Or a little bit different if it's bigger fiber particles. Well, that's what these guys are. Cholestyramine, cholestipol. The newest one that came out is cholecystevolam, and that actually comes as tablets, and you can just swallow it. These guys bind, as I said, they're anion exchange resins, so they bind bile acids, and lots of other anions as well. So when you think about that, if you're binding up bile acids, what are you effectively doing in terms of the cholesterol balance? You know, remember what bile acids are? Yeah, so you're preventing the reabsorption of the bile salts or the bile acids. These are breakdown products of cholesterol. So as you remove bile acids from the normal enterohepatic cycling that they do, you end up decreasing the cholesterol pool. Because obviously more cholesterol has got to be shunted to bile acid production to make up for the bile acids that are lost by binding to the resin. So this is how they work. They're really nice in combined hyperlipoproteinemias, like type 2. They can reduce bile acid-induced pruritus in patients with biliary obstruction. And I do know people that have ended up with pruritus associated with pregnancies that have been given cholestyramine to help in that disorder also. So what's the good news with these guys? The good news is they're not systemic drugs, so they stay in the GI tract. But the bad news is a lot of GI effects, nausea, flatulence, constipation, unpleasant gritty taste. Usual doses don't impair vitamin absorption too badly. But if you've got a patient on very high doses, then they can pull out fat-soluble vitamins A, D, E, and K. And that can be a problem. Now, if you think about it, though, depending on how you dose things, if you dose the resin, say, 2 hours before a meal or 4 hours after a meal, then you should get most of the absorption of the contents of that meal, and so you'll have minimal effects then on these fat-soluble vitamins. And that would be appropriate dosing regimen. Drug interactions, long as your arm. Anything that's an anion is going to bind to the resin. So once again, you can think about what binds. Well, aspirin, digoxin, tricyclic antidepressants, methyl dopa, many of the beta blockers, statins, thiazides, barbiturates, tetracyclines. You don't need to write all this down, but you get the point? Lots of things bind. And so the patient's got to understand that timing of therapy is important. Either 2 hours before a meal or, say, 4 hours after the meal. Now, if they want to eat something after they drink this gritty slurry to get that yucky taste and sensation out of their mouth, that's fine, but it shouldn't be a regular meal. Okay? There is a study out that says that cholecystevolam has less binding than the other two. But whether or not that's totally accurate, it needs some corroborative evidence. So those are the bile acid sequestrants. These are all anion exchange resins. They simply adsorb, bind up anions in the gut. And the primary thing they bind up are your bile acids. They prevent the enterohepatic cycling. They make cholesterol be converted into bile acids and that sort of thing. Okay. The next class we can talk about are the HMG-CoA reductase inhibitors. These are the statins. And I mentioned earlier that they have a number of nice properties. And that's why people tend to not even think about these other classes of drugs, but just start people on statins. What are they? Well, one of the things that they do is they're anti-inflammatory. So they're mild anti-inflammatory agents. So that's a beneficial property. Turns out they're mildly antithrombotic. So they have that ability as well to be able to decrease clots. They have an ability to inhibit C-reactive protein. And they can blunt bone loss. So this becomes a very good property in elderly women especially. Across the class, statins decrease LDL. Some are a little more potent than others. LDL can go down, say, as high as 50%. HDL tends to go up a little bit. It's not the best thing to raise HDL, and it can reduce triglycerides a little bit. So your statins really are the agents of choice in lowering LDL, so patients with high LDLs. Mechanisms competitively inhibits HMG-CoA reductase, so it's going to prevent the synthesis of... This is a reminder from Biochem. What is it? Goes to what? Cholesterol. Okay, ultimately. But what's the next step in the line? Mevalonic acid, maybe? Okay. One person agrees with me. All right. What's also interesting is, as LDL levels drop, then the liver says, wait a minute, this isn't cool. And so it ramps up the synthesis of LDL receptors. So there are now more LDL receptors in the liver to pull LDL out of blood. So besides just simply decreasing the synthesis of cholesterol in general, you get an increase in the number of LDL receptors, which is why this is such a nice LDL-specific agent, because it pulls then the LDL out of the bloodstream. So the liver becomes, if you will, kind of the target organ that accepts all the LDL, and it's not going to get into other tissues. Okay, so the net result is you decrease plasma LDL. It can actually be used in all forms of hyperlipoproteinemias. So the statins have a very broad range of effects. Problems. Hepatic dysfunction, so it does increase ALT and AST. The myopathy and rhabdomyolysis are a problem. Monitoring of creatine kinase levels is prudent. Drug interactions with coumarin, ketoconazole, cyclosporin, and grapefruit juice. Don't take the drug with your morning grapefruit juice. And don't use in pregnant or nursing women. In terms of pharmacokinetic profile, lovastatin and simvastatin are both prodrugs, and they can get into the central nervous system. One side effect that I didn't list, which is kind of, I'm not sure where to put the blame, because it happens on with patients that have Vytorin, which is a combination of the next drug, ezetimibe, plus simvastatin. But people have bad dreams. They can't sleep at night. It's like they're having nightmares all night. Small percent of the population. But simvastatin does get into the central nervous system. But many patients that can tolerate the statin don't do well when they're placed on the combination of the two drugs. So it's not clear who the culprit is. And it may just be an effect of the combination therapy. But it's something that you're going to have to watch for. And it's becoming more and more recognized as there's more use with the Vytorin. Simvastatin is combined with the Zetia to form Vytorin. Okay. Now then, many people, when they go to get their supply of Zocor, since this is a chronic med, what do? They want to save money, they go through the mail order pharmacy, so they get a 3-month supply. So you might think, well, if they're older and that sort of thing, if they took the entire collection of 3 months supply, would they do themselves in? And the answer is really no. They won't cause a fatality, and all you need to do is support vital signs, wait for the drugs to get out of the system. So people have been known to swallow their entire bottle of cholesterol med. Anyway, the next drug on the list is ezetimibe, or Zetia. This is a new class. It inhibits the absorption of cholesterol. Really has minimal effects on HDL by itself. Small effects on triglycerides by itself, but a nice decrease in LDL. What's interesting is when it's combined with the statins, though, many patients will show much greater effects on raising HDL than you would expect from the statin alone. Or if it's not additive, it's greater than additive. And so it's become really a nice kind of thing. In fact, it's so nice that this is what the companies have done. This happens to be pricing, but what I wanted to really show you is Zetia by itself is usually used at about 10 milligram dosing. 30-day supply is now over $100, but anyhow, they took then Zocor, which is simvastatin, and you can have different amounts of simvastatin. You can see the prices. So when the company got smart and made the combination, they priced it so that it was basically identical to the Zetia by itself. It turns out it's cheaper than Zocor at the highest doses. So they started pulling in market share, if you can think that way. But what these numbers are showing is these are a combination of 10 milligrams of the Zetia and then different amounts of the simvastatin. Some people that have the nightmares don't take the drug at night. Instead, they'll switch and take it with their morning drugs. And that tends to reduce the incidence of the nightmares. But there's some people that it just doesn't work on. And you won't find much of a discussion of that in the books, in textbooks. Okay. Any questions on all this so far? Okay. Well, this is one combination that's available. There are a lot of other combinations that are available. Niacin has been combined with cholestyramine treatment. It's been combined with gemfibrozil. It's been combined with lovastatin. When you do that, the typical niacin dose is usually lower, so typically a gram, sometimes twice a day instead of three times a day. But combination therapy gets better results at lowering the cholesterol than individual drug by itself, because you're working on different mechanisms, and you can go with the lower dose of niacin, so you get a lower incidence of the nuisance side effects with that. Yeah, in the niacin, yeah. Now, statins have been also combined with the resins. They are not combined in a single pill. Okay, so your drug has to be taken either, you know, an hour, 2 hours before the resin and 2 to 4 hours after the resin. Otherwise, the resin's going to bind up the statin and it's not going to do any good. But you can combine that rationally. We talked about ezetimibe plus statin, that's Vytorin, and it's bad dreams. It turns out, everybody remember what amlopidine is? What's amlopidine? I don't think I pronounced that right. It's a pine. If you saw it spelled out, you'd recognize it. It's a dihydropyridine calcium channel blocker. That's been actually combined with atorvastatin in a single pill. So if you need a calcium channel blocker to lower blood pressure as well as the statin, you can take it as a single pill a day. And it's got two different concentrations of the calcium channel blocker and four different concentrations of atorvastatin. So there are a lot of combinations that are coming out, and why is that? Because there are a tremendous number of patients that are on these drugs. The one thing that's clear with these drugs, your goal is to decrease blood lipids. Most patients don't feel bad with high blood lipids. So you are basically giving them a drug that's going to make them feel less comfortable than they were before you started the drug. So what's a typical patient going to do? Stop taking the drug. If you stop taking the drug, what do you think blood lipid values will do? They go back up to where they were before you started the drug therapy. So the therapy is only as going to be good as if the patient takes the drug. They need to take the drug. If they withdraw from the drug, they lose the beneficial effects. So this is where you become salespeople. Okay, I know this stuff causes a little itching and maybe facial flushing. You should take an aspirin, that'll help reduce that, but it's really good for you because, okay, you need to become a salesperson. And actually, that's why most docs start with a statin. They don't start with the niacin, they don't start with many of the fibric acid derivatives. Patients that are, I don't want to take anything that gets in my body, you know, you can start with Zetia, because most of the effect is in the gut. It does get absorbed. It does have effects in the liver, but most of it effect is in the gut. So people think better about it. But that's not all. There are other things out there. Many people take omega-3 fatty acids in fish oils, or flaxseed oil, for that matter. The idea here is that it inhibits VLDL synthesis, and you're getting good fat for bad fat. So people that take fish oil are, in fact, increasing their fat content in their diet. Even though it's good fat, it's still more fat. So if you're trying to keep a person on a step one or step two diet, or the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute diet, You know, your goal is less than 7% saturated fat, so if you take this, then that's okay. It doesn't matter. But if in the step one, step two program, where you are trying to limit total fat as well as saturated fat, then additional fat may not be the best thing for the patient. But many people take the omega-3s. Also, vitamins B6, 12 plus folate have been reported to reduce homocysteine production. There's been a claim that in some patient populations, homocysteine levels are elevated, and that contributes to the hypertriglyceridemias. So if you use all these vitamins, you can help reduce that. Well, if the patient doesn't have high homocysteine levels, then that therapy is probably not doing them a whole lot of good. So the person who thinks they're smarter than you are, who's going to take these vitamins to lower their cholesterol, may not get any benefit from it because they may not be part of that population pool where there could be a benefit. Another agent that's on there is red yeast rice. Red yeast rice is an extract of a food product created by fermenting rice with red yeast. And what's interesting is you have a mixture of statins. So red yeast rice reportedly lowers cholesterol upwards of 20 to 25%. You're looking at something that costs $30 a month total. It's a mixture of statins, so people think, oh, well, if it's a mixture of statins, I'm getting all the benefits that the statins give me. And there are data that suggest they're right. But there are people that don't like it because it's not a pure chemical. It's a mixture, and that's true. It's a mixture of statins. But there are no ill side effects that I can find in the literature from it. The other thing that's interesting, just a second, the other thing that's interesting, it's a hot product from the Chinese market, but the other thing that's also in the Chinese market is hawthorn leaf. Now, you know what hawthorn leaf is? You know anything about Chinese medicine? Either one of you? Okay. I was going to bring a box in that a friend gave me. It's got all these symbols on it. I'll try to remember it, and you guys can see if you know what it is. But apparently hawthorn leaf, hawthorn berry extract, can reduce cholesterol. And so I have a friend that takes all these herbal products. I don't know what he spends on them, but he spends a bundle. But he says that this one product that he's taking lowers his cholesterol by 57 points, and he hadn't changed his diet. Now, he's about 400 pounds. He's about 6'5", so he's a big dude, but he's clearly overweight. And his diet's terrible. He eats anything and everything he wants, and a pizza's an appetizer. So, I mean, he's a big dude. He eats a lot, okay? But so I don't know. There are things out there that people will try that they will swear by. And even if it's just placebo, what should you do? Don't tell them they're crazy. Don't tell them they're wrong for trying it. But if you want to switch them onto something else because the numbers still aren't where you want them to be, his cholesterol was in the 375 range. So when you think it dropped 57 points, that's great. But it's still 300. So as I told him, I said, well, I'm not sure. I don't think your doctor would be happy with you. And he said, no, he wasn't. He cussed me out. I'm not sure that was true. But knowing the person and knowing his physician, I can well believe that the physician gave him a stronger lecture than the average person would get. And I'm sure that this guy's so bullheaded that it didn't do any good. I know him. What can I say? But he's, you know, He's going to go the herbal route. People do that. Don't poo-poo it. Say, that's fine, but can we add this? Let's try this. Let me work with you. We'll do part of this and part of that. And if you add a statin to it and you knock it way down and you get blood levels that you're really happy with, never tell them it was your drug and not their herbals. Okay, don't bust their balloon. Okay, enough soapboxing. Any questions? All right, when you come back in, I'm going to have a box of little clickers for audience responses. We're going to go through some review questions and see how you do. So pick them up.